Hello, this is a recording of a teaching session on June 19th, 1997, here at Holden Village. This session is entitled The Summary of the Commandment Series, and it's titled Because God Cares, and it's led by John Buca.
You call us to be responsible and accountable, and you love us so much that you are willing to discipline us as a parent disciplines their children. Continue to care for us and love us now and always, for Jesus' sake. Amen. We're going to have a potpourri today because of the fact that we're squeezing five sessions into four, and we are trying to wrap up a lot of things. The one dynamic that Holden has always been about is community, and that's very true this week with the theme, and this summer with the theme, No Longer Strangers. My first vocation is that of a parish pastor, a father of six, a husband of one, and my second avocation, Katie? Got one? Okay, you got one. My second one is as a writer. I have written six educational resources for Augsburg Fortress, one of which you hold in your hand, which is Stop, Listen, and Love, a resource on confirmation ministry. A second one is 10 Key Events in the Life of Jesus, which is Bible Basics. Appearing in 98 will be a VBS session for youth, a junior high witness session, which includes dealing with the assets developed by Search Institute, and two sessions on the media, two units on the media for high school. I'm also an associate of Augsburg Youth and Family Institute that was developed by Mert Strumman, a spinoff of the Search Institute. For that organization, we've developed two different resources that are on sale in the bookstore. One is Passages and Pathways, which is a series of workshops for parents of preschool children. And secondly is Bridging Beyond the Barriers, which is a confirmation resource that includes 25 sessions on the Small Catechism for students and 25 sessions on the Small Catechism for families. And what we have done very much at New Hope is included the family in the conversational process for confirmation based on much of what we're going to do today. So we're going to do three different things today. First of all, we're going to take a look at what Luther says about the close of the commandments. And for that, we turn to page 30. And I need to tell you that as a writer and as a youth and as an adult, part of the most difficult time I've ever had with Luther was as he tried to summarize the Ten Commandments. Because he does so by... come on in, please. Erica, do you have some more copy?
Yeah.
Okay. By saying, I, the Lord your God, am a jealous God, punishing the children for the iniquity of the parents to the third and fourth generation of those who reject me, but showing steadfast love to the thousandth generation of those who love me and keep my commandments. Okay, as I dealt with that as a youth, it was extremely scary for me. Either we have a left-sided audience or we have a right-sided brain thing going on here, but we're all this way, except for you two. So what we want to do right now, and what we're going to talk about, is that God calls us to be accountable. And in the words of one of the Niebuhrs, and I don't remember which one it was, my first guess, it was H. Richard and not Reinhold. God has created us with an ability to respond. So that Hugh's way of spelling responsibility is this way. R-E-S-P-O-N-S-E-A-B-I-L-I-T-Y. Now, I used to think, as a kid, that it would be great to get out from underneath my parents and not have any rules. But what I learned is that the older you get, the more you realize you're always accountable to someone. Ultimately, you become accountable to God. I also think that one of the scenarios of what hell might be, however you picture that, is that hell could be a place where there's no accountability, where nobody cares enough anymore to call us into accountability so that we're no longer answerable to anyone. And as I thought about that, and as I struggled with trying to write this 10th unit, because if I would have had my way, I wouldn't have combined the 9th and 10th commandments. I would have ignored the summary, and I would have gone blissfully on. Came to the conclusion that these two things are really gifts of grace. And that what, I remember we had one person in Fred's class this week say the Old Testament is all law, the New Testament is all gospel. And what this says is that there is grace in the miracle that God gave God's children the Ten Commandments because God cared. Now, as we think about God's care, for those of you who are new, we've been doing small groups all week. Those of you who have been here know the routine. Break into small groups of four or five. Only requirement is that you have one, two, or more youth with you. Go for it. Okay? And then we will begin with the scenario, I'm in deep trouble. And we'll run the group. Okay? And introduce yourselves. Okay. Somebody want to read that, please? I'm in deep trouble. Go ahead.
Hi, my name is Daryl.
I'm 14. Okay, listen up.
Okay. Hi, my name is Daryl. I'm 14 and I'm in deep trouble. You see, it all started when my friend Tad was over at my house after school. My mom, dad, and older sister worked, so we were home by ourselves. The only trouble with that is that when there's nothing to do, we get pretty bored. Last Tuesday was one of those days. So while Tad and I were watching television, a rerun that we've seen 100 times, Tad said, "Hey Daryl, how come you have 2 cars and your mom drives to work with your dad?" "I don't know, for a weekend stuff, I suppose." "Daryl, have you ever started that car?" "Yeah, a million times," I said. I also lied. I had never started it in my life. That's when the trouble really started. We found the keys, went out into the cart, and started it. I made a mistake. When I put the car in gear, I shoved the shift lever into reverse. Then I stepped on the gas pedal. The car shot out of the driveway, and I backed into the path of an oncoming car. Fortunately, nobody got hurt, but I'm in deep trouble. First of all, my dad said there's no way he's going to let me get my permit at age 15. I mean, I make a mistake, and he goes ballistic on me. He claims it's because he loves me and cares for me that he's doing that, but he sure could show his love and care in a better way than that. I don't know if he'll ever simmer down. Then again, he says that if he didn't love me, he wouldn't be angry and ground me. Second of all, I've got to go to court. I'm really scared of that. I don't know what the judge will do. I don't know if I'll be put on probation. I really don't know what is going to happen. All I know is I'm in deep trouble and I'll never let being bored make me do stupid things again.
Okay, pick a moderator, a person who will be the leader of your discussion, and talk about the two questions that we're talking about.
If you were Daryl's parent, what punishment would you have given Daryl? What, from soup to nuts here, what did you guys talk about?
We kind of talked about maybe not so long of delaying of your permit, maybe just a short period of time. And maybe not even based the permit, more of another kind of punishment. Because going to court, we thought, is punishment enough.
Give us another creative way to punish, if you want to punish. We're going to have another scenario over here where someone did something and there wasn't any punishment extracted. But let's, what's your creative alternative? Did you have one?
Well, like a talk, like, you know, how the parents talk to the kid about it. That's
Okay. Nice talk. Okay. You would have reacted the same way.
And that on the court.
Okay. This group, what did you talk about?
We thought maybe the punishment, since he was going to court, and that depending on what that punishment was, maybe this was a little severe, and that the father had done that at the spur of the moment because he was so upset.
Anger is a secondary emotion, in other words, feeling. I get angry when, okay? If there's another feeling that Daryl's dad is struggling with, what might that feeling be?
Fear.
All right. What is a parent's biggest fear?
To lose their child.
You know, kids, remember this. In any primary argument with your parents, if you scratch them deeply enough, especially when it comes to curfews, the biggest fear that parents have is to bury their children. So part of what Daryl's dad is doing is probably overreacting greatly. But he's probably thinking, oh my, it could have been much worse. Here, this scenario here. And maybe if you want to, Fred, share what you were talking about with your in-laws as well. But what did you talk about here in this group?
Well, the gamut kind of started with Grounded for Life at one end.
Grounded for Life, typical parent reaction. Never, ever again. Okay, go ahead.
And paying, for damages.
Paying for damages, okay. Fred, you want to share your?
Well, I just told a scenario in which something very similar to this happened, in which someone in my family saw to it that there were no consequences, and that made me angry.
Okay.
So
why were you angry about that, Fred?
Because I wasn't only feeling scared, I was feeling very betrayed.
Okay.
Trust was violated, and I'll never trust that person again.
Okay.
But it isn't my child, so it is slightly different. It's a nephew.
Okay. So that's another issue. When the sense of betrayal happens with youth and parents, youth are really under the gun. You really are. Because parents are asking the same question that Fred says, how can I trust you again? And I know none of you youth have ever been in those situations, because none of you would do what Daryl did or similar to that, right? But, okay, now, youth, if you were parents, how would you have reacted? How would your parents have reacted if you had done what Daryl had done, youth or adults? Some adults you carried back in time. What did you talk about here? This group. Second question under the first arrow. How would your parents have reacted? Bruce, any idea?
No one can tell my kids, but I did this when I was a kid.
I like this. No one can tell my kids this, but I did this when I was a kid. Go ahead.
Anyways, I explained to our group that I wasn't grounded, But like you pointed out, I had a long discussion with my parents, and trust was a real issue for a long time. They didn't believe me. And that was something that you kind of learned secondarily. It was a punishment enough, I guess. And I saw it as a punishment, but in a sense it was something that they were reinforcing.
Okay, okay.
Yeah, good learning experience. Okay. It's hard to teach teenagers.
Yeah, good learning experience, hard to teach. This group, how would your parents have reacted?
We would have been grounded.
You would have been grounded? Okay. Anybody else reaction in this group? Your father would have gotten physical. Okay. That's one form of reaction that is extremely painful that is out there. Sometimes parents get physical, and that can be sad. Go ahead, this group. How would your parents have reacted?
Mine would have done the same thing that the first person spoke. A big, loud discussion, and they would have known that I would have felt pretty disappointed in myself, and then there would be a trust issue.
My dad would have had a heart attack.
Your dad would have had a heart attack. Okay. Okay. The other thing that is scary for parents is that youth are always pushing the envelope, and they're always believing that it will never happen. Fill in the blank. The accident will never happen. I'll never get caught. No one else is going to know. Okay? You want to say, ma'am?
Pretty much the same thing that Jill's parents did.
Okay. Pretty much.
I know you have a long talk.
Okay, I'd have a long talk with you. You gotcha. You gotcha. Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Go ahead.
Are you talking to us?
I'm talking to your granddaughter. Go ahead.
Well, it'd be a sign of love because you're actually caring for them and you're showing that you want them to grow up and to be a very good person.
How old are you? 9? Well, you're going on 16. That's cool. Okay. Anybody else in this group? Okay. If you didn't hear her, she said you care for them and you're showing them that you want them to grow up to be a good person. Okay. This group. How can punishment be a sign of love? Did you get to that? Okay. This group over here. Did you get to that question?
Kind of, but not really. You talked about does punishment work?
Go ahead.
Well, we talked about with older teens that sometimes by that stage punishment may not be real effective because by then maybe the parent's attitude of disappointment or should be enough control. By that time, a parent has a harder time trying to get control, and so it's a little late to start the punishment.
I won't say exactly what I had done, but I remember that the day after I had done it, my father picked me up from Concordia St. Paul, and he said, you know, you're too old to ground. And I didn't know how to react. I really didn't know how to react. Okay. But what we're saying here is that as the Israelites lived in community, God sets the Ten Commandments in front of them to help them set limits. And it's within those limits that they exist in the community, in the wilderness. And as we talk about how we live and relate in community, the Ten Commandments become God's gift of love to help us relate and limit us as we react to one another in community as well. Okay. Now, I promised a potpourri today. We're going to jump from third. Any questions so far? Since this is the last session, we have a sampler. So we're going to go from there to page 13. This is on the fourth commandment, something we did not talk or discuss this week. The scenario is David's dilemma. David's dilemma. Somebody read that, please. Read the part of David's dilemma. Okay, the person from Oregon, tell me your name.
Stevie.
Stevie? Okay, go ahead.
David's father was an alcoholic. Now that David was in junior high, he rarely invited friends over because he never knew in what condition they would find his father for when they came to the house. When David's father was drunk, he was embarrassed to... He was an embarrassment to David because of how he acted. One day when David came home from school, his father gave him a bag full of empty liquor bottles, and in his drunken state asked him, "David, your mother is on my case for drinking too much. Will you take this bag to the dumpster in the park and throw it there so your mother won't see the empty bottles?" David just stood there and thought about what he should do next.
All right, talk about it. Same way, you've got four questions. If you were David, what would you do? Would you do what your father wanted? If David refuses, is he breaking the fourth commandment? What would be the most helpful thing for David to do? How can the fourth commandment help those youth who come from dysfunctional homes like David? Go for it. Okay. Fred, what does the Hebrew say for the word honor? You know? Remember?
Yeah.
I don't.
Honor comes from a word in Hebrew that means to consider heavy. So to honor someone is to consider them heavy. And
that's really helpful.
Let me finish. Where it works,
go ahead.
The way you play it out is you honor, that is, you consider someone heavy with love for you.
Okay.
That's what it means to honor God. You always take account of the fact that God is heavy with love for you. And so to honor a parent is to remember that, you know, when things are working the way they're supposed to, parents do what they do because they love you. So you honor them for their love of you.
Okay, thank you. That's helpful. If you were David, would you do what your father wanted? Let's start with this group. Wow, what's going on?
We really didn't have a consensus.
Oh, that's okay. It's okay to have.
Outside the door, but
not finally,
basically.
I'll leave them outside. Yes. That was your consensus.
Took him outside the door.
So the dad thinks you took him, but...
Mom. Yeah. Oh, fine. Creative solution. Take him, leave him outside the door so mom trips over him when she comes home.
So you did it, but you really didn't do it.
Okay, you took him from dad. You left him there, though, because you forgot because friends came over and he had to go someplace.
That's counter-manipulation.
Yeah.
Huh?
That's counter-manipulation.
Counter-manipulation. Okay.
Whoops.
Go ahead. Good. This group.
We kind of said that we would do it for our father, and then we'd go, when our mother got home, we'd go and have a talk with her, tell her, look, we really need to get dad some help. This is, tell her the situation.
Okay. Anybody else?
I said, you know, the empty bottles to have the proof.
Smell his breath.
That's really good. You don't need empty bottles to have the proof. The other issue, though, that is going to be big time between husband and wife is that husband is using David to cover husband's tracks. Katie? Okay, if you took him, you'd show the dad that it was right that he could do it again. Okay? This group. Go ahead.
And the second one?
The first one.
Oh, first one?
Would you do it?
Would you do it?
No.
You wouldn't. Okay? Somebody else? Did you talk about
yeah.
that?
I said I would because David's been living with an alcoholic father his whole life, and the family has made up their patterns of how to live and enable and be codependent with each other. So it's probably David's normal routine to do what his father asked him to do just to make life easy for everyone.
Okay. Okay. Anybody else?
You might think that he's keeping his parents together from splitting if he takes the bottles. And if he didn't, his mom would come home. She'd be mad and he might split. So he might think he's keeping the marriage together. And if the parents did split, he'd be in a worse situation and probably feel worse.
Okay, whether you realize it or not, Matthew, you're saying with what chemical dependency folk have said for years, that each person plays a definite role in an alcoholic codependent family. You're advocating that David play the role of peacemaker. There are roles assigned, there are people called heroes that try to take the pressure off alcoholic families and the whole constellation. There are people that get in trouble all the time within alcoholic families, and that is their way of taking the pressure off. What happens in an alcoholic family is that everybody does what they can to maintain the balance. And the alcoholic, who doesn't like that balance, is constantly going to do what he or she can to upset that balance, okay? Which creates chaos. Okay, good point. This group, would you do it?
Yeah, because he might hit you if you don't, or throw you across the room or something, tell you to do it anyway.
Okay, the threat of violence is not direct here, but in an alcoholic situation, we don't know. Okay. Upstairs, do you have any reaction, one way or the other?
I don't think so.
No reaction.
Well, you're doing such a great job out there.
No, seriously, what would you do?
I guess, honestly, I wouldn't do it if I were put in that position. I mean, if I just all of a sudden was David, but like she said down there, living in that setting, if I was truly David, who had lived in that kind of an environment for that long, I think the Davids of the world probably do go ahead and hide the bottle.
Yeah, I think you're right. Okay, now, David refuses. Is he breaking the fourth commandment or not? Would you come up? Go ahead.
When it says honoring, you don't have to obey.
Oh, okay. That's good. Okay.
You just have to honoring, not taking them would be helping him, so you would be honoring him.
Okay. Not taking them would be helping him. And that goes back to what Fred is saying, is to consider heavy with love. Okay, that's very good. Tell me your first name.
Michelle.
Okay, this group. What'd you come up with? Okay.
I think we also felt that if a family is an alcoholic family, it's probably fairly dysfunctional. So honoring a dysfunctional parent is a very difficult thing to do anyway in that dysfunctional family.
Okay. Go ahead, this group. Go ahead.
No, I wouldn't. It's not breaking the commandment because it's based on trust. You have to the mom has to be able to trust the dad. And if David takes the bottles and throws them away, that would not be trust.
Okay, so that even if David takes the bottles, it destroys the trust that mom has in David, and then even dad has in David. And interesting perspective. Okay.
I think we also commented that in not taking the bottles, he was honoring both father and mother. He's got another parent.
Okay.
To consider.
Okay. More and more in today's society, scenarios like this can possibly be taking place. Okay. This group. Come up. Izzy or Izzy? Break.
Pretty much leaped to 3 and 4.
Okay, well, let's leap to 3 and 4. What's the most helpful thing?
Well,
for him, David, it'd be taking them, but for his dad, it'd sort of be for him to take them. But it'd be either way, it's for him to take them would be better, because we don't know how his family or his dad acts when he's like drunk or whatever, so probably be better for him to take it. Most helpful.
Okay, yeah, so that would be the most helpful.
For him, it'd be helpful, but for the dad, it wouldn't be as helpful.
Okay.
This is a child.
That's right. You got. Thanks.
Putting that burden.
That's right, Colleen. Thank you. Somebody else, this group. It's the most helpful thing for David to do. Did you come up with that, anything? Nah.
Well, we're talking about talking to someone else.
Okay, talking to someone else. And that really is connected to the fourth question as well. Okay? Somebody else, this group. Helpful thing. You didn't get that far, okay? This group.
We thought the David and his mother had to go down and on to recycle the bottles.
You hear that? David and his mother should go to Al-Anon and they'd recycle the bodies.
Go next door to a neighbor that does know the problem that's going in the house, because they probably would have a similar idea that he is drunk, and going over there, and they would probably have a better idea for him to do.
Okay, you've done a wonderful job. What I want to do now, we're moving along quickly because we're running out of time. Go to page 20. I promised we'd talk about marriage today. We're going to do this in a true-false, agree-disagree situation. This will be true, this exit over here. The white exit will be false. Please stand up. This is called where you stand. And take this with you and move to the appropriate place when I ask you. Okay, first question. It is important for both the man and woman to come from similar family backgrounds. True, false?
Where's true? Where's false?
True is over here, false is over there. This is under the guise of thou shalt not commit adultery.
We're in the middle.
Can we do that?
Okay. You can stay in the middle. That's part of it. All right.
More to this side than I am.
Okay. Quickly, Jim. What makes you over here? Please listen up. Go ahead, Jim.
Maybe I don't fully understand the question. If this is to provide strength in the marriage.
Well, you can interpret it that way. Part of the challenge of this is that it's open to whatever way you want to interpret it. And obviously that's one way you're choosing to interpret it. Why would it provide
the probability of things working well is, in my opinion, much higher when you do have similar backgrounds, meaning shared values.
Okay. Similar backgrounds, according to Jim, is shared values. Let's sample someone in the middle. Anne?
I guess I felt like it's one factor, but there's a lot of other factors that are involved. So I would say I don't think I could go to the false and say it's not important.
Okay.
But I think I saw it as one of a number of factors.
Okay, thanks, Anne. Bruce, you're way over there. Not way over there, almost over there. Tell me where you're at.
I agree with you. I think it's
okay.
It's a communication issue. There's a lot of things that go into a relationship. Background is a very important issue, but I don't think it's overwhelming. And I've certainly seen a lot of excellent relationships with people who come from entirely different backgrounds.
Okay. Anybody else comment on this question?
Opposites attract.
Opposites attract.
Ouch.
Okay, wait a minute. Michelle, you heard an ouch. Bruce, explain the ouch.
I think sometimes opposites occur because of reactions to the people within your own group. I think people sometimes chase... Oh, I'm sorry, back up a step. Sometimes relationships occur because we're punishing your family. you find someone that you know the rest of your family will disapprove of. In that sense, there is an attraction.
Oh, wow. Okay.
But opposites.
I think that's where that comes from.
Okay.
But I mean, opposites can also be like complimenting. Like, you know, when I met my husband, his financial responsibility was like he had no clue. And I was the person who balanced the checkbook to the penny and knew when we were a penny off. And slowly he's taken on much more financial responsibility. And actually put balancing the checkbook.
Okay. I'm not going to touch that one.
Okay. Somebody like her.
Go ahead.
There is a book out that basis for a good marriage is incompatibility.
The basis for a good marriage is incompatibility. Okay.
Chuck Snyder from Seattle.
Chuck Snyder from Seattle. And what is his whole premise, besides the fact that it's okay that people are incompatible?
That you compliment each other.
You compliment each other. Okay, okay. Number two, if I get married, it will not make a difference if the person I marry is less intelligent than I am. If you're at true, you're saying it's okay that the person is less intelligent. If you're at false, you're saying it's not okay that the person is less intelligent.
Okay.
It'll
make a big difference. It might be okay.
Okay, you all. Bob, how'd you interpret the question and why are you there?
I don't think that good marriages are based on mutual intelligence. They're based on love, respect, and trust.
Okay. Love, respect, and trust. Good formula. Matthew, why are you there?
Because everything isn't dependent on one person. Like, every question or... I can't say it, but everything would be dependent on one parent, like if they had kids.
Oh.
All the questions.
Okay, okay. If they had kids. The most poignant moment in... what's his face? Not Gomer. Forrest Gump.
Laughs like a box of
chocolate. Is when he finally meets his son.
Is he smart?
You know, and even though that was a very fictionalized scenario, it kind of reflects what you were saying.
I actually said, is he stupid?
No, I don't think so. He didn't. I don't.
Is he smart or is he like me?
Or is he like, yeah, okay. Okay, Fred, you're over there.
I just think that people who have the ability to have similar interests and things like that are much more likely to have long-term mutual stimulation of each other. If you have one person who just is kind of a moron.
Okay.
So, I mean, intelligence could change too. Someone who maybe never finished high school could finish high school and go on and go to college and become a mentor.
Like on Home Improvement.
Okay. Anybody else want to jump? Anybody else want to jump in here?
We're all morons on
the bridge. Oh, Bruce says we're all morons in our own. It is interesting that both physicians are over here. No, it is. That's great.
I barely finished medical school.
I'm not going to touch that one either. Go ahead.
Well, not everybody's going to be the exact smart as you. Some people are going to be just a little bit dumber than you, and some people are going to be a lot smarter than
you. You keep it on. That's great. Okay, one more question. We're going to jump down to five. I believe the church should make it more difficult for people to get married. True? False. Whoa. That assumes that you know what the church does to allow people to get married. Fred's out the door.
This is the more positive.
Yeah, actually.
Okay. Okay, first of all, let's hear from some of the clergy.
Clergy?
Yeah, Roger?
I studied that in social studies.
Go ahead, just wait.
I don't think we should necessarily make it difficult. I think we should require more.
Okay.
We do, in the last year, a lot more counseling, preparation, prepare inventory, workshops, trying to direct the young people to conflict management seminars. We do all of that now. I didn't do that 10 years ago.
Okay. Fred, I'll pick on you. Go ahead. You're pickable.
Well, I've married people that I knew I shouldn't be marrying.
Yeah.
You know, I once married a couple where the bride objected to the fact that she had to have her arm on the groom's arm the whole time. She said, you may have to touch him for the whole time.
Okay.
You know, I'm thinking, wait a minute. You know? But the real, you know, more appropriate comment is, it's a legal thing. I mean, you can do it with a judge or a JP or a motel clerk, you know. The reason you have it done in the church is because you're asking for a community to take responsibility for supporting this thing, which is not easy.
Yeah.
Namely, being married. You know, and so getting through that, this is really signing up for a community lifelong involvement in being a married couple. That's what it's all about.
Great. Okay. Go ahead.
I think if the church sets too many requirements, I'm getting married, that people are going to go use the judges and the justice pieces. And it's not going to mean anything.
Okay. Okay. Tim?
What he said, they might even just go to Vegas or something. And, like, it's better to, like, have it sort of easier so you can have a bunch of people watching you get married.
Okay.
And, like, most women look for that day of their whole life.
Don't talk about women if you're not one.
Okay, and
even though I'm over here, I'm suddenly thinking about we've had a discussion in our church about letting people who aren't members of the church be married there, and our pastors have said there's not a single person that I just married because they wanted to be married here who has increased their involvement in the church after that.
Yeah, yeah. That's
so that it really is true that if you make it real easy, it doesn't necessarily mean it improves what people are going to do with their life or their marriage. So okay. Maybe being more restrictive is
okay. Okay. Stevie, you're way over there.
My aunt Nicole got married in a church in, like, you know, somewhere in the Dallas or something. Uh-huh. And one of the priests, one of the preachers or whatever, she didn't want to marry him because my aunt wasn't the religious of that church or whatever.
Uh-huh.
And I thought if they wanted to be, if they wanted to be married in the church and have a religion or whatever, then they could start.
Okay, that's a good point. Anybody else? Anybody else have any comments?
I just have a comment. When my husband and I met and married, he was not real active in any church, and I was never went near a church.
Mm-hmm.
And had we had to do that, I don't know that I would have. I mean, if he would have gotten real active, I might have said, hey, I'm out of here.
Tell that story, Ann, to your pastors. There's one person that goes against the grain of what clergy usually think. And I think we as clergy need to hear those stories too. Okay? Go ahead, Bruce.
Weddings come at a point in life when most young adults are not active in the church.
That's true.
And, you know, making it harder, just exactly as you say, it's you're blocking the entry rather than opening the door, which is what we're trying to do.
That's true. Okay, anybody else?
Can I make a comment as someone who's hoping to be in the clergy?
Yeah, I've been waiting.
I'm on internship right now, and I am interning under a pastor who commonly often does marriages for people who come from out of town he's never met. And I'm really struggling with that.
Does he do any preparation with them at all?
He'll meet with them maybe for an hour or two, sometime the week before or something like that, and I'm really struggling with that. And as someone who's going to marry people, if they're looking for a blessing from the church, I'm not hoping to speak for God's blessing on their marriage, but as a person who is speaking for the church, I would hope that before I marry them, before I witness their taking vows with one another, I want to have a sense that I know that they at least have a chance of being a committed couple, and that they know that they are entering in this marriage, that whoever made the comment about community down there, that they are hopefully having witnesses at their marriage who are going to be the support group for them. And if they're married in the church, that the church is a part of their marriage, that congregation is a part of their marriage as well, so that we are there as a congregation to support them in their struggles with marriage. And I don't know, making it really easy, yes, we get to speak a word of God to people in an important moment in their life, but if we meet not at all with them before we're witnessing their vows, that it just, I don't know how good I can feel as a human being, as a person of God, to say that, yes, I am saying that this gets the go-ahead and it's going to be a really great thing when I don't necessarily know what it is.
Yeah, the toughest marriages I've performed are marriages of people in which there is pregnancy, and one might be a teenager, and there aren't any good solutions. 90% of the time within 5 years that marriage will fail, 90% of the time. And then how, as clergy and good conscience, can you say, you know? But if they don't do it with you, if you don't perform it, somebody else will, and you lose that tie. Matthew?
Sometimes people get married, I should be on the other side, but people get married because it's the right thing to do. Like if you have a kid, you shouldn't be split up. You should be married.
Mm-hmm. Oh, you're saying it well.
You have a kid when you're a teenager and you've never been to a church at all, and then you're like, then you should be married because when you have a child, you should be married.
Okay. No, that's very good. One more, and then we need to wrap it up here. Go ahead.
I was just going to say that whenever a young couple comes to me, I look at it as an opportunity for ministry. And I've had couples come to me where the one person didn't have any sense of Christianity or the faith or even knowing about the Bible or hadn't even been in church. But after working with them for 6 months, I brought some of those couples into the church in very active membership by just being very patient and not lessening the requirements, but just keeping a pastoral relationship going with that couple. And I think mentoring would be critical if we could get it going.
I like that. And I can't resist you. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
I was wondering, why do the brides have to wear dresses?
You ask your grandma that question. Thank you. If you want to take this, you can. But if you don't, please leave it. Thanks so much.